Did you hear someone keep stealing the wheels off the 1st Division's patrol cars?
Oh no!
Yeah, they're working tirelessly to bring them to justice.
Did you hear that Archon CL's new shadow puppet performance is set to make 1 to 2 billion Mira?
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, but I guess those are only projected figures.
Yeah, well, I just wrote a script about the dictionary for the new Archon CL performance.
Is that so?
Yes! It's a play on words.
Oh, good job, good job. Kel, I see you did all the jokes this week. Thank you.
No problem. Some of them just wrote themselves.
But I see you didn't really do any that are puns on character names?
No. Is that a problem?
No more so than you knocking my classroom globe into the pool and leaving it there overnight.
Oops, sorry about that. But it turned out okay. I saw you put it back up in your classroom.
Yeah, I did, but I kind of have to keep it turned in one direction at all times because only this side of the world is good.
What's wrong with the other side?
That hemisphere is all wazy.
And we're done.
So no one said all games were gonna be this way. Backlog's a joke, a choke. Gamer cards are my hey. It's like you always play 2 years behind. When you really need a boost to heart, to health, or even your mind. No, Kel'll be there for you.
She'll say games that are so.
Matt'll be there for you.
When you're feeling that you're stuck,
we'll be there for you.
Hello and welcome to RPG Backtrack, your regular deep dive into your favorite RPGs. We are a production of RPGamer.com, bringing you such fine podcasts like RPG Cast, your weekly news show, Q&A Quest, weekly feedback show, and us, your bi-weekly nostalgia show. I am your host, Kelly Ryan, and with me, as always, my podcast partner in crime, the Randy to my T.O., Mr. Matt Mason.
Am I supposed to head-pat you? Is that what we're doing?
I thought you said head-pats.
Are we there yet?
Next series.
Okay.
Next series. Oh,
there's
man.
There's a few head-pats, but Reen is the master of head-pats.
Yeah, you know, I mean, Randy and Tio, though, it feels like that could be a head pat kind of thing. I mean, he's just not the head pat guy. I'll just tap on the back. Good job, girl. There we go.
That voice you heard was Josh Carpenter.
Ahoy, ahoy.
And we've also got David McBurney with us.
Invading from Q&A Quest.
Unfortunately, Sam had to cancel at the last minute because she was feeling under the weather and felt terrible. And I'm like, no, you're fine. Health first, always. We can handle this.
I thought you were about to say, unfortunately, I was here, and I was about to feel very insulted.
No, not at all. Heck, I'm not even feeling that great today, but I'm just kind of pushing through it because I want to have the show. But but that being said, this is part two of our Crossbell endeavor. Now we are talking about Trails to Azure.
Azure, they say.
A nice, tight two-game series.
Mm-hmm.
Like we'd never see.
I had to really stop myself from calling the show Azure Dreams, because that would just cause nothing but confusion. I could have done Trails to Azure Dreams, but nah.
Azure Dreams. I'm sure that all 10 of the Azure Dreams fans would be up in arms.
If I wasn't on the show, I would probably be one of them.
I'm just going to assume that you were one of the people playing Azure Dreams on the Game Boy Color.
Actually, no. I put the PlayStation version on my PSP a long time ago and played through it that way.
Yeah, I got it for someone for a birthday back in like 1999. That's the beginning and ending of my relationship with Azure Dreams.
One of these days we will have that podcast. I can only hope. Me and I think the other fan on the staff. I want to say it's Ryan M. But
I will show up, but only for the Game Boy Color version.
What, no love for the crappy DS sequel that controlled like ass? No,
absolutely none.
Well, that being said, we could talk about obscure Konami roguelikes later. Now let's just get in. Well, actually, we'll probably let's take a brief musical interlude, and then we'll come back and just dive into Trails to Azure. So we'll be right back. Welcome back to RPG Backtrack, where we are talking about Trails to Azure. I forgot the Legend of Heroes title. Does anybody even call these Legend of Heroes anymore?
They still use it.
Okay. Yeah,
I occasionally use it as like, if I just want to say like saying Trails from Zero into Azure as a collective can be unwieldy, so I'll sometimes call these Legend of Heroes 7.
Ah, gotcha. I always forget about the title, or the... I guess main title. Anyway,
I appreciate that the like Windows for like Cold Steel has been listed as AU Densetsu 8182834.
Oh my! I was wondering if they just dropped that, kind of like what is it with Persona? After two, they just dropped it, or was it after three they dropped
They still have numbers.
No, but like the. Shin Megami Tensei.
I think they did drop it after
Shin Megami Tensei Persona 4 was Shin Megami Tensei Persona 4. Persona 4 Golden was the first one where they did not have Shin Megami Tensei as a super title in the West.
In Japan, the only one
with the title referencing it is the first one, Megami Ibunodoku Persona.
Hmm. Which is funny because they first tried to market it as Revelations in the US. Revelations,
the Demon Slayer. I think it's last Bible.
And the weird Virtual Boy game.
Jack Brothers, Hee-Ho at the Labyrinth.
But no, Trails to Azure released on the PlayStation 4 in Japan on September 29th, 2011, and then on the Chinese PC in 2013. Was that the one that, Josh, you had to buy in order to do the GeoFront translation?
Yeah, I think this was the Chinese one. The earlier, the Zero was the... I think it may have been originally a Chinese PC version, but it was... It was being sold in Japan. For some reason, Zero was being sold in Japan, and Azure was not. I have no clue why, but yeah, I had to go to some weird Chinese website and buy it for like $9 or something. and you could download the file and install it.
And did your bank account call you?
It went through, no problems, amazingly.
Okay.
This must have been a fairly legit website that I had never heard of.
Gotcha. And then it was released on the Vita in 2014, and that was the version you played, Matt, if I'm not mistaken?
Yes. I did the PSP one again.
Okay, I thought there were fan translations of the two Vita ones, but I could be mistaken.
People definitely took the voice acting from the Vita ones and kind of like... hacked that into the PC versions. Were there? I can't remember now if someone did that to the...
I know that someone definitely fan translated the Evolution version of the Sky that was basically just hacking out the PSP and PC translations and jamming them in. I'm not sure.
I played the Sky ones. I remember getting those, but I remember looking because, yeah, I don't think they did. I think, David, you're right. They didn't get to the Vita versions.
Yeah, I don't recall ever seeing the Vita versions of the, because like it was such a long time before we ever got these versions. And I think most of the upgrades people actually wanted from Evolution were already backported into the versions we got. So,
yeah.
Yeah, and then we officially got this one in the United States on March 13th, 2023. Oh, sorry, March 14th.
Like 12 years later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just a bit. Just had to wait a little bit of time. Did you play this on Switch, Kelly?
Yeah, I did. I played both of them on Switch. I figured that since they were just upscaled PSP games, that I wasn't going to have nearly the problems that some people had had on, say, like the Cold Steel ones.
Yeah, the Cold Steel games, you know, like Falcom had spent so long as a PlayStation developer. They had all kinds of weird peculiarities. So, but like you said, these are old enough that, you know, the Switch shouldn't have any problem with it.
My only problem was that I just have a regular Switch, and I really wanted to be able to bring them with me, like, in the car or wherever, like I did the Trails in the Sky. But unfortunately, Switch's stupidness with save files and stuff, I can't justify getting a Switch Lite just for that.
Wait, is it hard to transfer saves? I know Wales does it all the time.
What? No, save transfer is, like, almost automatic.
Okay.
Yeah. That's... Heck, even upgrading to a new one, because I had old Switch and then got a new one when the battery thing came out in like 2020, the one with the better battery, that was easy. Yeah. Like, you just set them next to each other. They did that. And if you've got Nintendo Online, it's constantly backing up your games anyway.
The only problem, Kelly, is with digital games, because you only have one primary Switch.
That doesn't have to be logged in, and then that's all the secondary ones have to be logged in to play anything.
Okay. That makes sense.
That's where the disconnect comes, because having two kids and a wife that plays on the Switch, that's an issue for me. Like, I got them their own accounts, but not till like 2 to 3 years after we got our Switch. So like all our Mario Kart data, all of our other, like, when we first bought Animal Crossings and stuff like that, is on my primary account, because we didn't all have Nintendo accounts. And now, it's funny, because I'll be playing a game on a secondary Switch, logged into my account, and then I just get kicked off, and it's like, scream across the house at my kids. Who's playing Mario Kart? Who's playing Animal Crossings?
Gotcha. Okay. Well, I'll have to look into this a little bit later, because, gosh, it would be nice to be able to just keep my Switch in my pocket. But I digress. I played the Switch version. Came out March last year, and I didn't get to it until like February of this year, and I can't remember what else came out at around that time that kept me distracted.
March 2023.
Yeah, I actually think I got a bug up my butt to try to finish the Switch version of Breath of the Wild before Tears of the Kingdom came out.
That sounds right. Yeah, Tears of the Kingdom probably took up all your time.
Yeah, because I never finished all of the DLC content, or I never found all of the shrines. I basically beat the Wii U version, got my Switch about 2 months later, and then started over and just never finished and wanted to do that version afterwards. So I didn't get to that until this year, when I kind of had a lull in Switch games. It's like, okay, I will start Trails to Azure, and then could not put it down. Not only does that game play really well, but it's got such good pacing.
Mm-hmm. That's the great thing about both of these games. Like, even though they are both the two Crossbell games, both they are self-contained, you know, actually self-contained little games themselves. It's not like the Cold Steel games where it's, you know, like it stretches across, you know, 4 100-hour epics, and
they're all clearly one part that doesn't tell a fully self-contained story.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, and Cold Steel is horrible with the cliffhangers after every game, practically. But this one, you know, like, you have two stories that are interconnected. The things that happen in the first, all the way back to the very beginning of the game, are playing into the ending, but it's not one continuous story either.
I was so shocked when the cold open, the discrepancies between the the ending of the first game and the cold open that depicted it were explained away at the ending of Asher.
Yeah, that was a fantastic ending, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But that's a little ahead, I guess.
We'll get there.
And even though this game takes place in the exact same spot, it didn't feel like a rehash of the first game.
Well, one of the big pluses is they give you the car, and then you can just skip all of the drudgery of, you know, like walking everywhere. Now you can actually just drive your car, basically fast travel everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Once I figured out that you could trick out the car, I got obsessed with trying to find all the little car parts.
It figures that Lloyd is
completely.
No, it figures that Lloyd is like obsessed with cars.
I did everything.
So, of course, like all games that I do that with, I tried to make it as gaudy as humanly possible. Humvee.
It does. It yeah.
Well, they got the mountainous regions in Crossbell.
It's got to be off-road.
Yeah.
There's no paving to the hospital.
It's got to be hauled up to all those, those monsters that are, stalking the roads.
So how much time has passed between the first two games? Does anybody know? Or the first game, like 6 months?
Something like that, yeah. Because it opens with you like tracking down the Chairman Hartman and the
the mayor's assistant.
The mayor's assistant who is part of the cult, yeah.
I was like, me and a few friends have been like, since playing this, just constantly joking about the idea of like, because like the guy is running around like screaming about how once he has all this power, he will finally become the mayor. And it's just like so much work for the most pathetic possible title. Like, I will gain the powers of the god and then I will finally be mayor.
I had appreciated that Kiad pretty much got her own room and was just kind of going to school and living a normal little girl life.
Yeah, she had the room at the end of the hall, the big one. Wasn't that where the commander was in the previous game?
Yeah.
Maybe it was a different floor at the end of the hall, but yes.
She's, there's like an entire like thing about, like, she has, you can get decorations for her room, which is nice.
Yeah, I was trying to buy decorations for everybody's rooms just because I like seeing.
Oh, yeah, it has like a fun cutscene whenever you get a decoration for their room.
And I like the types of items that they like. Like, Lloyd likes cars. Randy likes anything naughty.
Gotta get the pinup girls.
Mm-hmm. I think at least one of Kia's items is just a stuffed animal larger than she is.
Yeah, a penguin.
And of course, Tio is just all Mishy.
Yep, yep. Mishy is real.
She's like, Mishy is life.
You will learn the truth at Mishy Land.
I do love my Mishy plush. I wish that they would release more stuff like that. They had a Mishy hoodie at one point, but I think that was just a prize giveaway, not an actual item to buy.
There's more of that in Japan, but it has been, you've gotten more of that stuff since NIS has kind of taken over. That is the plus of NIS. They do some of the merch.
So as far as new party members go, you get Wazzy right away, which kind of surprised me.
Yeah, that was not one I would have seen coming from the first game.
No, he does not exactly seem like the type to join up with the police, does he?
Yeah, I don't know that I called him being in the party. I knew they had to have a lot more planned for him because he gives off the vibe of having a lot going on under the hood.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm not sure if I would have guessed immediately joins the party.
Did you manage to guess what he, like his ultimate reveal was? Like, because that was a surprise to me later on.
No, that was a surprise to me too.
The degree was what caught me off guard.
Yeah,
and it shouldn't have been because Kevin shows up like within the first cut. I think in the cold open.
He was in the cold open. Yeah, the prologue.
Enjoy your Kevin. You won't see him for another like six games.
Oh, I love Kevin.
Kevin, you're the best.
When I did the Perler Bead ones a couple of years ago, I did Kevin and Lloyd. Those are my two.
Good choices, good choices. Two good boys.
I think my favorite thing about Kevin is the fact that he's Vash the Stampede and Nicholas Wolfwood made into the same character.
Yeah, I'm always surprised when I hear like his battlegrounds because I'm like, no, I just expect to hear Johnny Young Bosch.
Let's see, who else did you get as a new party member?
Noelle.
It was one of the best characters. She would guest in the party at parts of Trails from Zero.
Mm-hmm. And now she's officially on loan from the Defense Force.
Yeah.
She's fun. There's a lot more characters in this one. You actually have to decide who's in the party at any given time.
Yeah. Because do you find out who Rixia really is at the end of the last game or at the beginning of this one?
I think it's more of a, like, I think the party finds it out in this one.
Yeah. Yeah. We knew Ben the first game, but I don't think Lloyd and the party finds out until Is it even when you fight Erenrod? I think is when Erenrod like cracks her mask and everybody realizes who she is.
Yeah, it's a while into this one before I think they realize what's going on.
Although, I mean, she basically tells Lloyd what the deal is, although Lloyd, I think, is a little too obtuse to figure it out.
But yeah, that was a reveal that kind of shocked me. that the sweet theater girl is actually a badass ninja.
Isn't everybody in that theater troupe something?
You know, it wouldn't surprise me if that was the case.
Pretty much.
And then this is the game where you find out Randy's backstory and his kind of issues. And that he used to be a Jaeger, and his father was like a Jaeger king, and his uncle and cousin keep trying to bug him to become his true part of the Jaeger king. And he's like, no, I don't want any of this.
Yeah, because he was part of Red Constellation, and they were the ones who fought Zephyr. So the his dad was the one who died in that fight with Fee's, you know, adoptive dad.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
We're getting the other side of, well, I guess this was the original first side of that story.
And Bloody Shirley shows up a lot to taunt poor Randy, and I always feel sad when that happens, because he just... He seems like he's so done and sort of ashamed of his past that he wants absolutely nothing to do with it. And Bloody Shirley just will not leave him alone.
No, she is definitely quite psychotic and sadistic.
Just plain mean.
So yeah, even though I played this recently, I only remember like bits and chunks of the story.
There's too much Kiseki.
You're not done. You'll never be done.
No. Nope.
I have played a lot of games this year, and sometimes they do run together.
Well, I mean, a lot of the second game, I mean, part of it is you're getting the other side of events we've seen before. You know, like Chapter 2 was the whole West Zemuria trade conference, which is going back to Cold Steel, you remember. And then, you know, most of the rest of the game after that point, the second half of the game is, you know, Crossbell's independence push and all the machinations that all the different parties are going on, and you know, the SSS trying to figure out exactly, you know, like all the, you know, like trying to unravel all the other different schemes that are going on that are revolving around Crossbellian independence. And of course, you know, Ouroboros playing their own little schemes in the background.
This is definitely more woven into the greater narrative of the, you know, Sky and Crossbell and Cold Steel than the first. You know, the first kind of put a little bow on kind of the Sky people, but this one definitely where it starts. And having, like, I was so excited when I got to the West Sumerian Trade Conference, because I was like, oh, I know this. I'd actually played Cold Steel before, so I was like, yep. I was like, oh, I know what's going to happen here. Like, shit's going to go down.
The only thing I could think of when showing that cutscene that showed off that tower at the very beginning of the game, all I could think of was, how did they get a sheet that big? and then after that, it was, well, this is going to be a dungeon later in the game.
Speaking of the way that this and Cold Steel crossover, I remember getting to a point in Cold Steel where there's like a character that just like, he puts on a helmet in a way that's super portentous. And like, it's one of those things that like, I had friends who, they played Cold Steel first and they were like, I don't know why this scene is like written or arranged this way as though I'm supposed to recognize this guy. But like, if you played like Zero and Azure, it's like, oh, he's going off to die. He's going to die. Like, that's why him putting on the helmet is supposed to be like, oh, that's who that guy I killed was. Because he just shows up Azure.
Yeah, because all of the stuff that happens in the first two games of Cold Steel is talked about and set up here. It kind of does. Like, whichever way you play the games, like, you get spoiled for the other. I mean, that's the intent.
Correct. Yeah, I remember who I messaged on the side while playing this, and I'm like, holy shit, Osborne's still alive? Because I had played Cold Steel 1, which ends with him getting shot, then played these two. And I'm like, oh, well, wow, thanks a lot for spoiling the whole thing that he's alive.
Which, you were a fool for thinking that Gilead Osborne would die in such a fashion.
You know, I was very early. You know what? Cold Steel 1 was my second Kiseki game, so I had not been learned on the ways.
Yeah, like, because I remember just playing Trails in the Sky the Third, which seems to have been written at a time when they weren't sure if they were going to make Crossbell games or Erebonia games next. And so, like, a bunch of the vignettes in the third are just setting up that Gilliath Osborne seems like a pretty untrustworthy guy.
Yeah, I did the weird Sky 1, Sky 1, Cold Steel 1, then back to Sky, and then in the Crossbell. But then, you know, if you're in playing Trails in the Sky, Trails of Cold Steel 2, at one point you get to that fortress, and you're looking out at Crossbell, and there's the big frickin' tree from the end of this game.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, because they're talking about, like, whoa, something's going on in Crossbell. And literally it pans over, and you just see this huge tree way in the distance, like, oh, okay.
Popped out in a different video game.
Yep, which, you know, had you played them in order, that wouldn't have been a spoiler. I mean,
yeah. I mean,
it wasn't for me, because...
I've seen people have, like, well, what order am I supposed to play these in? I'm going to get spoiled for one or the other. And it's like, then play them in release order. You'll be fine.
Yeah.
They knew what to be expected to know.
Yep.
But they still wrote it in a way that if you play it Cold Steel first, it's fine. Yeah. You know?
It's not ruined. Mm-hmm. Like, the thing I would say about most things with spoilers is that, like, if a story beat actually works, it's like, it might not be ideal to already know it, but it's not, if the story beat actually works, then it's not a problem to already know it.
Correct.
And this is very much Crossbell's story, so knowing a few details does not ruin it.
Yeah, like the bits that you learn from the Cold Steel perspective tend to be things that are just like, this is just how the world state is being affected by the Crossbell games happening in parallel. And that's fun. That's part of what makes Trails interesting, is that the world state is coherent enough to be affected by events from one game to another.
Oh, completely. Yeah, these things don't reach the popularity level that they are at this point without that interconnectivity.
It's unique to the, you know, to the Trails series. Like, there really aren't any other... Heck, there's not a lot of media property. You know, it's like Marvel tries to do that. But I mean, not like Trails does, where it's that interconnected.
Yeah, when I tried to describe what made this series as a whole so compelling, it's like playing through a series of your favorite fantasy novels, like ones that actually feel like, oh, this is a series with different arcs that, you know, actually feel like someone was thinking about, like, you know, they obviously were written in a sequence, and therefore, like, there's things that become weird because, like, different story choices were made, but, you know, it feels like playing through a series of fantasy novels that has, like, a certain coherency and a certain connectedness that most games, even sequels, don't actually have.
Oh, no, you're right. Yeah, you're reading the Wheel of Time and following somebody else in another city for a while, but
yeah,
the events are still going on.
And it does that by hitting on both, like, the large narrative notes and then also just, like, the tiniest little NPCs who just keep popping up game after game, sometimes with their own little arcs and stories.
The derangement of fishing society across Cimmeria.
Oh, yeah, this one had the huge battle where...
I was going to say, the conflict between them, yep.
Yeah, the Lakeland Corporation, like, bought out the fishing guild, and then they turn into a huge fight, and it's like a whole side thing that Lloyd, you know, has to go on these fishing, you know, battles for, you know, fishing supremacy.
Basically, every RPG, like Japanese RPG especially, has some kind of fishing minigame in it. And I feel like one of the ways that I grade how good an RPG is, do I like it enough to engage with the fishing content? And Trails passes with flying colors. I engage with the fishing content because the fishing content leads to fun vignettes and story shit. So even though the fishing content does not personally interest me that much, I'll still play it. And that, I think, speaks to the game's qualities in my very strange brain.
I mean, my benchmark for fishing content in games is Breath of Fire 3, because I think that's the best fishing mini game, and they all have to compare to that one. I think this one does do fishing very
David,
well.
David, bring that up on Q&A and ask Wheels what he thinks about it.
How about I don't? Because, like, I've been trying to get him to stop just randomly taking pot shots at Breath of Fire for, like, 5 years. And
Oh, good. You knew exactly what I meant.
Of course I did. I talked to the man multiple times a week. I know where this is going.
At least this game's fishing didn't make me want to throw my controller like Trails the Thirds did.
Oh, God. Yeah, that one just had that interminably terrible like timing that you just had to get absolutely perfect. And you wanted to do it so that you could get past that door, but yeah, that was terrible. Yeah,
I must have just been lucky because I don't even remember there being an issue with it. Some things go smooth.
I did everything, including closing my eyes, turning the volume down just to see the prompt. Yeah, nothing worked.
Don't think, feel.
So as far as memorable moments for this game goes, one of the ones that sticks out to me is the attack at the Grand Trade Conference. One, because, you know, I know that something is about to go down at this because it was talked about in Cold Steel, though I was far enough removed from Cold Steel to not remember exactly what it was. But I have to admit, seeing helicopters fire into the window of a huge skyscraper kind of made me a little bit uncomfortable. Even though I have seen that happen in movies numerous times.
Just shows you're invested.
Well, I mean, that whole thing was just like how much, you know, both President Rocksmith and Osborne are, you know, manipulating all the different chess pieces to try and get what they want, which is Crossbell.
Yeah, they're 100% like salivating over carving up Crossbell.
Yeah, it's the one thing they can agree on. Like, yeah, we should both carve up Crossbell.
We would have disagreements on how it should be carved up, but we both agree that we're going to carve up Crossbell.
And we're totally fine with having this assassination attempt here just so we can use that as a means to carve up Crossbell.
Like, anything that'll give us leverage is good.
Yeah.
It's also kind of neat seeing some of the figureheads of old, like Oliver and Princess Claire, or I guess she'd be Queen Claire at this point in the timeline, wandering around those halls and being like, hey, I know that person.
You get to meet everybody again. Mm-hmm. Like, they bring you in on the assassination plot.
Yeah.
I don't think they totally realized that Osborne and Rocksmith were likely behind, you know, like staging the whole thing until much later.
And then at some point, wasn't Lecter involved, too?
Oh, Lecter's always involved.
Just Lecter was involved.
I mean, if you're playing these in the correct, you know, like if you were playing Crossbell first, like you run into Lecter late in the game. This is after Osborne has been shot and Lecter's just like totally nonchalant. And you can kind of tell like, oh, yeah, like Osborne definitely okay. Because if Osborne had actually been dead, like I don't think Lecter would be quite that nonchalant about everything.
Yeah, and like Lecter being one of those characters that, again, if you played Sky the Third, it's like, oh, this motherfucker is up to everything at all times.
Mm-hmm. He's playing like a doofus, but he is not.
He is he is at all times talking out both sides of his mouth. It's a good setup though, because it does make you wonder, like, okay, when the chips are down, am I going to have to fight this man to the death, or is he just going to end up on my side? Because it's going to be one or the other.
and we'll be at different points in the game, in the series. There will be times when he's on your side, and
depending upon which protagonist I am at this exact moment.
Yep.
So then towards the end, you kind of find out some stuff about Kia.
Oh man, that I already spoiled it, but like that's my most memorable moment in the game is when they just call flashback. They explain her powers by flashing back to that cold open that I assumed was different just so that it wouldn't spoil aspects of the first game's endgame. And then it's like, nope, there is a canon explanation for why that was different. And it's grim.
Because Kia is the artificial Septarian that Mirabelle and the Croy family are what? Like, they are the alchemists that have been kind of like running Crossbell from behind the scenes for like over 1,000 years. And she's supposed to be the artificial homunculus that they're trying to grow into a god that can manipulate like causality itself.
She can manipulate reality in such a way as to like reach back through time and like change how things happen. And like, I love that there's a bit where like she's like feeling guilty because it's like, well, you only like me because, you know, I probably subconsciously made it so you like me. And like one of the things I like best about Lloyd and this entire party is he's like, yeah, so what? I like you. I care about you. It doesn't matter why. This is not like, you know, caring about someone is not a point of like valid exchange. It's like, I care about you. It does not matter why. It's good. It's a great scene.
And like you said, the tie-in of that they actually did die in that initial, which we thought was a dream sequence. And I think they even kind of like had flashbacks later on in the games where Lloyd is kind of having that dream over again. And you're the whole time you think like, oh, it was kind of like a dream. You know, they're usually... Yeah,
that happens all the time in RPGs where it's like, oh, it's sort of a premonition of like, oh, you're going to be doing this later. But like, no. And it's even weirder if you played like, say, Cold Steel with its cold open. That has no explanation. It's just a cold open because like that just happens sometimes. But no, in this, it's like, no, that happened quite literally. And if Estelle and Joshua from Sky aren't there, your party goes in and gets absolutely wrecked immediately and killed.
And Kia is the one who has manipulated reality to save them.
Has reached back through time and ensured your survival by ensuring that Joshua, Estelle, and Ren were all there. And it's like, oh, that's really cool. That is probably the tightest plotting of the entire like trail series, I feel like, is shared between Zero and Azure in the sense that like there's a lot of stuff that connects these two in ways that allows them to feel like deeply interlinked without them feeling like one can't make sense, like without them feeling like they can't make sense as individual stories. It's like the time where you can tell it was sort of the last time that there wasn't any sudden like tap dancing to stretch them out a bit because like something had come up during development.
And the way, on top of that, that they tie back to the Sky games, you know, the way that they're weaving this in to kind of like finish off that last dangling storyline of Ren and Joshua and Estelle. I mean, it's just like it makes it all perfect.
And the it was kind of a brilliant way that they did things between Sky, Crossbow, and Cold Steel was that like each one would resolve their plot, but in a way that left like just a little bit dangling for the next one to take up as like, okay, your investment isn't done because like the people you care about from the last game, they're intimately connected to this exact conflict. And you can tell that because like when you start playing Cold Steel, you see that like, oh, the Crossbow thing, because you know this game concludes with like, okay, there is an all-out war. Erebonia has invaded, and so you start playing Cold Steel, and it's like, oh, Erebonia has not yet invaded, and so you see where you're investing at that point.
Yeah, this game does have a grim ending for
oh yeah, everyone like the characters you care about are alive, but they're not in a good place. Like the epilogue is just, oh, they're in a really bad place.
Well, I mean that's the ending of the game, is like they have to make that choice. You know, the choice that Mirabelle is like giving them is like, oh, hey, we can just leave Kia hooked up as the Septeran and she can just kind of manipulate reality so that Crossbell is awesome. But, you know, like they're not willing to sacrifice her.
We are not, in fact, going to sacrifice the life of an innocent child in order to fix this.
Yeah.
they're a better man than me. There's been video games I have completely done that in.
I took the path
to an ending.
There are video games where I could see someone doing that, but like something to be said for the writing of both games in this duology is that Kia is a cute kid character who functions, who works. Like it's like, oh, this is a child I would want to protect. She is like someone I care about, which is a very fine line to walk when you're trying to make a cute kid character. It's very easy to make them too saccharine or like just too uninteresting. Kia works.
Kia is one of the few kid characters in a game that I actually like. Normally, kid characters get on my nerves really bad because they make them too clingy or give them bad voice acting or just you do so much wrong with them. And no, Kia is just adorable, and I never want anything to happen bad to her.
Falcom does a pretty good job with those. Like Tita's fantastic little kid character. They usually do a pretty decent job with their kid characters.
They are much better at it than most. Like a track record that allows me to just trust them when they make them.
Yeah.
No, they're annoying and put it into Jonah.
But Jonah's supposed to be a little shit. It works.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Like he contrasts well, especially because like he's got that always second best bit with Tio. So
yeah, at least she puts him in his place.
Yeah, and so it's like it's okay for him to be annoying because it's like, well, he's always going to come out. He's always going to lose to this like less annoying child character. Man, what a good game. I wish I didn't have 900 RPGs to play so I could just play it again.
Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, this is definitely one I wish I could go back and play on Switch, yes. Because I finished this before they even announced the Switch ones.
Good excuse to replay it as any.
Oh, exactly. Exactly. Like, oh, hey, fully featured.
Hey, it turns out the Switch 2
is hacked.
You might as well.
Timely.
Yeah, they just announced that at a shareholders meeting.
Yep, big secret, big secret.
No one's surprised. Good to know.
Yes, but, you know, of course, good to know. I was actually just telling my family about that today. I was like, by the way, this is why we won't need to rebuy everything in the past.
Now my enormous collection, of Switch cartridges will still have a home.
Yep, this is why I buy physical.
No, there was the one other big reveal that we didn't get into, which was the lawyer Ian Grimwood kind of being like one of the major manipulators behind everything. Mirabelle kind of selling out her, you know, like you spend the entire game, you think Dieter Croy must be the one behind everything, and it turns out he's just a dupe for Ian Grimwood and Mirabelle. Yeah,
the only thing that would make you think that wouldn't be the case is just that he seems so obviously the one who's doing it. So it's like, well, there has to be someone else, but the idea that he's mostly a fucking patsy and that it's really Grimwood, a character who floats around throughout the entirety of Zero. He's really helpful, and then it's like, yeah, I'm the one that was manipulating this. Also, I killed your brother.
Yeah. Well, I shot your brother in the back.
One of the reasons why I was convinced it was Dieter is because, you know, you kind of, if you played Cold Steel, you know that Mirabelle is bad.
Yeah.
And I figured, well, that's where she got it from. So that has to be the connection. And apparently that wasn't the case.
Yeah, it still got me that with her just like stabbing him in the back and just leaving him hanging out to dry was kind of like, oh, shit, damn.
But at the same time, it's like the blood-sucking lawyer, who knew?
He's mostly helpful most of the time. It's like you can kind of let him phase into the background and not think much about it.
Him and Arios, of course, both have the sad backstory. You know, well, we all knew Arios is, you know, his wife being killed and his daughter being blind.
Arios had to be involved because like he's someone that seems so like conflicted throughout the games. But yeah, like the exact way it plays out, and just of all people, Grimwood, a character who's physically imposing but never shown in a fight.
I just loved the reveals and the ending. Like I said, Grimwood, you should know to expect the character who's kind of like quiet and kind of sort of helpful and just keep showing up. You should know to be suspicious of them at this point, but I guess I wasn't suspicious.
I think Grimwood gets away with it just because it's the second, like, it's not in the first game he appears in that he's revealed. Like, you're used to it with, like, you know, in Sky and in Zero, you wouldn't think that there'd be two of those floating around in Zero. But also just the fact that, you know, in Sky, they didn't go the entire game without revealing. In Zero, they went the entire game, you know, at the end they reveal it. You'd assume, okay, I guess they're out of rabbits to pull out of the hat. And then, nope, it hops out right at the end of Azure. It's like, oh, that's actually, you know what, you got me. You showed me one thing, and I assumed that there wasn't a second.
And Arios and Grimwood, you can almost kind of, given their backstory, you can almost kind of forgive some of what they've done. But Mirabelle is just like evil. Anyone who's involved with Paradise is just evil, you know?
Yeah, like there's when you know what Paradise is, there's no excuse to be involved with it. Like if you were party to that, I'm sorry, you're unforgivable.
Yeah.
So would you say that this game makes a good conclusion to the duology?
Oh, it's fantastic.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and then, I mean, also, like we said earlier, it leaves them in such a state that there's more. You obviously need to do more. That this is an ending, but, like, there's a lot of shit still to go.
Great to see what happens in Cold Steel so that you can see how this goes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was just stunning that they just absolutely, like, no, war starts, everything's terrible, like, you know... There is no happy, like, oh, we all made it. Like, no.
We get these great, like, pieces of art of just, like, the characters trying to survive in the midst of an invasion.
Yeah.
Like, it's a really striking to watch play out because it's like, oh, we've seen conflict. We haven't really seen, like, total war in this franchise.
I mean, that is kind of one thing that is a little bit irritating that this came out so late, is that this was setting up the whole Crossbell arc, but then most of us have already played Crossbell.
This is why I waited. Like, literally, I was like, I don't trust that we'll never get these, so I was willing to wait. And it worked out, because, like, experienced in context, these are incredible. Like, honestly, you know, I think we mentioned it in the Zero cast, but I would say, like, these are collectively the best Legend of Heroes.
Mm-hmm.
And
I agree, yes. Totally. Yes.
And I think that Sky and Cold Steel make them better. But I do think that, like, if someone was to ask me, I think Trails sounds really cool, but I don't have the space in my life to play 10, 50 hour RPGs. What should I play? I would say play Legend of Heroes 7, play Zero and Azure.
These are also unique, like we've talked about, like these are also unique in that they are much more self-contained than what came before and what comes after as well. Mm-hmm. So they're not that long of a game, either one. I mean, you could probably play both of them together in less than 100 hours. The two put together are less than most of the Cold, any of the individual Cold Steel games.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Especially if you're playing the Switch or PC versions. I don't remember I know that there's actually a qualitative difference between the Switch and PC versions and the PS4 version, because the PS4 version was the version that Falcom itself had made, whereas the Switch and PC versions were contracted out to a studio that Nisa had contact with that actually added in some nice improvements. So, like, those are the versions to play. It's not a huge difference, but it is slightly nicer on Switch and PC because those were new ports.
It's nice to have the high speed mode.
High speed's huge. High speed is huge. Mm-hmm. It also actually accidentally makes one of the point challenges way, way easier than it's supposed to be, but that's fine. There's a fight you have to resolve in a certain amount of actual time that is not sped up by the timer.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, the big benefits that I recall that I think might just be in the Switch and PC versions is the speed up and dialogue, like history. You can sort back through a conversation because a lot of them are really long. It's really easy to kind of get lost in certain conversations. So it's really nice to have that dialogue log to refer back to, like, okay, how do we get onto this subject? Okay, got it.
Oh, that's good in every game, because I always accidentally tap past something and, like, oh my god, I just, like, missed something.
I remember being so upset when I found that Cold Steel has a log. It is a log only of things characters say on the field, which means that all of it is just, hey, a treasure chest. So you can go back through 50 characters says, hey, a treasure chest.
I appreciate now when games have logs, just because you never know when an ADD moment's gonna rear its ugly head and you're like, wait, what were they just talking about?
I've been so happy replaying the Ace Attorney games where they added that into all of those collections. So it's like, oh, thank god I can review that dialogue.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just gonna say, man, like, yeah, that really is the thing that most sticks out in my head, though. It's just like, please, please play these games if you haven't already. I know we spoiled them. It doesn't matter. The telling is good enough that you will learn to love them like we do.
There is so much stuff going on in these games that you're probably gonna forget what we spoiled.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much the Trails series in a nutshell.
But for once, it's all worth hearing.
And there's also very obvious spoilers. Like, I'll never forget me flipping through the little art book that came with Cold Steel 1, my Cold Steel 1 special edition, and seeing Prince Olivert and being like, huh, if I played this game first, that would have been a spoiler.
You would have known who that bard was when he comes rolling in the sky.
Mm-hmm. God, I love. I was so like Olivier's. I still think of him as that because that's played Sky first. Olivier is one of those characters that, like, if the Trails games weren't as well done as they are, I would be immediately done with that character type because it's very easy to make that kind of character just so tedious.
And truth be told, I kind of like little hidden stuff like that. Like, okay, these characters clearly don't know who this is when somebody with a secret identity shows up. To me, that kind of stuff is fun.
You get a little hint of that in this game, too, because Olivert comes back with his Mueller tagging along, wandering around through Crossbell, and that's where the party meets him. In one of their quests, they have like a little quest where they run into them. It's like cute to have Olivert back.
So, as far as pricing goes, once again, I think that at least the Switch version had a somewhat low print run because I'm seeing...
The physical run of this was basically you had the 1 month chance to get it.
Yeah, because I'm seeing complete ones in box for like 90 on eBay. And it's like,
with this.
I'm really glad I picked it up when I did.
Like this is the reason that, like, I don't have time for East 10 yet, but I picked it up because it's like I realized in a month I will not be able to.
You know, I got kind of lax there because we was getting good, pretty decent print runs on JRPGs. It wasn't like the 90s when they would just print like 50 copies and then that was it. But especially on Switch, that doesn't seem to be the case as much anymore as far as physical goes.
Companies love the kind of margins they get on digital compared to physical. Whenever I think of like low print runs, I remember going to pick up my pre-ordered copy of Devil Survivor on DS. And the person pulls it up from behind the counter and is just like, it's a good thing you pre-ordered this because this is the only one we got. And that's the only reason we got it.
Yeah. Sorry, I completely lost my train of thought. At least in these times, when you miss out on a physical, you can still get digitally. You're not completely screwed.
Oh, yeah, so much better than when I spent, like, you know, a few months trying to decide whether I was willing to, like what the cheapest copy of Shin Megami Tensei Nocturne I could get was.
Oh, God, you're giving me NAMM flashbacks. I spent $80 on a copy of Nocturne, and it's like, well, I might as well do it now before it hits triple digits. And then they had a second printing. Like, Atlas was kind of doing those secret second printings where they were just starting to show up in stores. They did the same thing with Persona 2 and Rhapsody.
Yeah, they did weird ones with like Persona 2 because like they did that in like 2007. This was like a reprint of a PS1 game.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm kind of glad I did it because at least the $80 version had the soundtrack. But at the same time, it was like, you're shitting me. I could have bought that for half the price and been fine.
I think I spent like $60, but I got a copy that did not have a box. I mean, it meant I could play it. It was okay.
Yeah, $80 for the version that isn't even that good. I like the HD remake a lot better because it has a difficulty slider.
That's helpful.
Yeah.
You can have your choice of Raido or Dante.
As far as Trails to Azure goes, it's $40 on Steam, and I imagine that's what the price is on the other storefronts.
Yeah, I expect it to go on sale on a relatively frequent basis because all of these games, whether they're NISA or XSEED published, go on sale all the time.
Yeah, it's on sale right now for $30, and I imagine the first game is on sale right now too, and you can buy the entire Nihon Falcom bundle for the low price of $470. $7.
That has a lot of non-Trails games, some of which are not worth your time.
I was going to say, that seems like too much money to spend on all those.
See, it comes with Daybreak, Reverie, Zero Azure, Trails of Cold Steel 3 and 4, Nyuta, Ease 8, Ease 9.
Monstrum Nox.
And then all...
Now I see where it's at price, yeah.
All of the DLC.
Oh, yeah, because, like, Cold Steel has, like, a million pieces of DLC.
Yeah.
That's not worth it. But do go ahead and pick up, you know, like, you can especially, like, these go on sale a lot.
I really wish that they would just do this bundle without the DLC.
Sure would be nice.
Because it'd be nice to have all these on my Steam Deck, but oh well, I'm not going to lose any sleep over it. And you was talking about wanting to replay these on Switch, David. I was having that same crisis today with the Sky games, because those are on sale for $10 and $20 respectively, and I've been wanting to replay those.
I want to replay those. Though.
Yeah,
I was gonna say,
Like if I'm gonna have the excuse to replay it, like the new perspective offered by the new graphics should be interesting enough to me.
It's like, yeah, I know, but I'm gonna miss the chess jokes.
Yeah,
I use them too. But I mean,
go like, on a website, spend like, half an hour going through it, and then enjoy 40 hours of updatedness.
Someone needs to tell Kondo they need to put bad programming back into their new engine so we can have chess jokes again.
Mm-hmm.
We need you to handle this in the most deranged and inefficient way possible. For the good of the friend.
That being said, it is a good idea to pick these games up. They're good JRPGs, and for me at least, they kind of harken back to like the PlayStation era.
Got a real nice sympathy to them.
Yeah. Where you know they had the cute little chibi models and the kind of low attempt at 3D, but not quite the jank 3D that so many of them were known for back in the day.
It's like what your nostalgia makes you think a PS1 game looked like.
Mm-hmm. Falcom made some janky 3D games, but thankfully these were not ones of that.
Yeah. Oh, and since that was brought up in that list, hey, everyone, try out Nyuta. It's connection to Trails is tenuous, but it's good, and I don't see people talk about it much.
we'll see how strong the link is to the rest of the Trails games, I guess, as we go forward. There's all those fan theories that have gotten more...
they've gotten more outlandish as time has gone by.
They have, but they've gotten more credence thanks to some of the stuff in, like, Reverie and Cold Steel 4.
Yeah, when I say tenuous, I mean mostly in the sense of it, like the rest of them, it's obvious where they fit. Nyuta is like, however it fits, it's going to be weird.
Yeah. But they had a little girl that could manipulate reality, so who the heck knows?
I ended up rebuying Nyuta on the Switch because when I tried to play it last year, it was like right before my Japan trip. So I got about halfway through it and then spent 2 weeks in Japan and tried to come back and like, I have no idea what I was doing or where I was going. And then I think at that point, like some major PS1 game had come out that was kind of taking up all my time anyway, and I can't remember for the life of me what it was, but I'm like, yeah, I'm just gonna have to restart this up. And then it was on sale on Switch for like $15, and it's like, you know, if I'm gonna play this, I'm gonna play this like I played it was one of the Zwei games.
Yeah.
So I played that on my laptop. But it seemed like it would have lended itself better to portability, put it that way.
Yeah. I think it was originally a PSP game, which makes some sense. I would describe it as like an exact midpoint between like somewhere between like East 6 and 7 and Trails in terms of like what it's doing. Mm-hmm.
It shares a lot of DNA with the Zwei games, with the the way the combat like alternates between the floating character that does the ranged attacks and your main character that does the physical attacks.
Yeah. Yep.
Which Zwei never took off, unfortunately, for Falcom. So like we're never getting another one of those.
We already live with the first notion of a Zwei 2. I don't think the world is ready for a Zwei 3.
I love it with all the
game being cursed, but linguistically cursed.
I have to say, I am not usually a platformer or 3D platformer, whatever you'd justify that as, but I really enjoyed Nioh last year. That was very enjoyable.
Yeah, no, it's great. It's honestly great. It's very clearly designed for portable play. It's split into stages. They're like 5 minutes long. They have it's designed for replay. Like they have like, it grades you on certain little tasks and getting grade, like the little task achievements unlocks things. So it's perfectly designed for portable play. It was one of those ones where it's like, you can tell they're not porting a PC game to PSP. They just made a PSP game.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's another thing I usually do not do. I'm not big with replaying levels or whatever, but I did it for that game because it was like, I know what I can do now. I can do this. I can do that. I can get a better rating.
And you could tell that game came out at the very end of the PSP because that game, I mean, for a PSP game, it looked that's good. Usually Falcom is like, dragging like a generation and a half behind, but like, Nioh was actually like really pushing the hardware. It was an amazing looking game.
Yeah, and it upscales so cleanly on like those higher on the higher resolution displays because it's such a very like clean looking game. So even though it's like not pushing like a huge amount of polys or whatever, it's like the highest resolution, it still looks really nice when they blow it up in the like modern ports.
I still remember fighting that giant fish boss as you come flying down the huge waterfall and have to jump between the things coming down the waterfall.
Yes, there was one. There was one with something that formed a circle, and you had to keep going around the circle and do it. Oh God,
that's a great
crab one too.
Yeah, I think so.
There's a crab. Oh God, yep. I that was one. My son sat there and he's like, "You're never gonna beat this." I was like, "No, I will." And we just laid in bed for an hour and seven times.
You know, be fair, I don't think that Nioh is really that big of a game to justify a whole backtrack unless we did a whole Zwei Falcom show.
I try.
Well, we could put it on the list for next year. I just know that we kind of did a Falcom Scraps show in the pre-days, so...
Actually, it was one of the last ones in the pre-days, and it had some audio issues.
Did it? Uh-oh.
I don't know if those audio issues got resolved, but they were overlapping audio. Like the last lap might have got overlapped with part of something else.
I'm just trying to think of like what Falcom series that are too small for their own episodes to pair off, and it's like Xanadu next and Tokyo Xanadu next and Tokyo Xanadu and Gurumen. Sure, why not?
Yeah, we talked about Gurumen in that show.
That's right. Yeah.
A game that keeps getting inexplicably ported to everything. Not that I'm complaining. It's just like I remember seeing it come out on 3DS and being like, what?
Why?
How did this come back?
Crazy.
So unless we have anything else we want to talk about, since we had a little Nioh diversion there, I think we're ready for our roundtable.
I think we are.
Yeah.
Let's have a brief musical interlude, and then we will come back and get into our personal thoughts about the series. And welcome back to RPG Backtrack, where we are now getting into the RPG Roundtable. Our personal feelings, our thoughts, our favorites, our memories. So, guys, what was your favorite moment from this game?
All those cheesy 90s era hacking backgrounds that they had during all the hacking scenes. Oh, good Lord. I love all that kind of, like, ridiculousness. There were a bunch of hacking scenes in this game, so they got plenty of use of those. You know, I think hopefully, but people are old enough to remember that because that was the thing in the 90s and early aughts. Whenever you'd have a hacking scene, it's always like, oh, we got to have this, you know, like, oh, we got to show them going through the webs to get into the computer. So there's a lot of that in this game.
We got to show that they're in the Matrix, even though it isn't the Matrix yet.
Look at them break the door to break into the computer. Ooh.
My favorite bit was Holy Wolf Zeet, because you know they already kind of described him as a Holy Wolf in the first game, and you know he just looks like a kind of a bigger husky dog, and he's a good boy. And then they show Holy Wolf Zeet, who's like a big old Amaterasu-esque god dog, and it's like, oh my god, Zeet, you are amazing, and you become an attack.
Zeet is best boy.
For people who think that I'm just a cat person, no, I love doggos too, especially cool, awesome doggos like Zeet.
I just like being back in Michiham, basically Disney World. I like going back there. The interlude chapter was pretty good. That's where I paused the game for a year, and when I loaded it back up and got to play through it, I was like, ah, yeah, here I am. I'm back. This is good.
That's why I was playing this game ravenously before.
Did that one have the shooty roller coaster, or am I confusing it with another game?
Yeah. Okay. Shooty roller coaster was in that. That was one of the mini games.
Yeah. It's a very strange mini game.
Yeah.
That's fun.
And they even bring it back in Reverie.
Never miss a trick, then. I've mentioned this, but the funniest moment to me, and I'm not sure how intentional this is still a guy screaming about how he's going to get the power of the gods so that he can finally become mayor.
Dude needs some better goals, doesn't he?
Like,
sounds like it.
When your first step is like gain this incredible godlike power, and that's the intent to use it, it's like saying that you're going to like gain control of the world's nuclear supply so that you can like draw out $50 from the bank.
So, did your favorite check character change from game to game?
I will say no, because I might be the only one saying no. Still, Team Lloyd.
Because I gotta admit, Wazi, I can never pronounce it right. Wazi kind of caught my heart. He's
just
so
in this game. Yeah,
he's a ton of fun in this. Like, I can see it.
No, I'm sorry, they are so cool because they are canon non-binary.
The Grossritter has some interesting characters in it for sure.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, right. A lot, like, the Grossritter is already is swimming in strong characters throughout the games where Grossritter end up taking focus.
I have my fingers crossed that at some point we do get a game that just focuses on the Grossritter and you just kind of like go all over the continent. I'm so hoping when it comes to,
like, they keep talking about like, oh, we're going to conclude the series with the next arc, but it wouldn't surprise me if we get like another Zemuria game that is like, oh, we have all this stuff here that we can do things with. It's not the same series because that story has concluded, but we can still make Zemuria games.
Yeah.
Oh, definitely. Like, hey, 100 years ago during
this war
or whatever.
Yeah, or here's something that we've talked about, but we've never got to take center stage. And like, honestly, I'm not going to lie, Grossritter game would probably be a pretty strong case to make.
Trails of Grossritter. That. There you go. There's your name right there.
Trails of the Grossritter. Man.
I already like that character anyway. And then they say that he's part of Kevin's crew. And I'm like, yes. Now I want a game with him and Kevin and
Reese and
Gaius.
Yeah, there we go.
That's a strong party right there.
Mm-hmm. The best.
Is that
party.
A little too much green though?
Could be.
I mean, it's Team Green. Don't worry about
it. Team Green?
They're all slightly different shades of green. It's fine.
That's true.
So, David, did your favorite character not change?
Like, it's, you know, I kind of, like, I think, I like, last time I was going for, like, talking up Ellie and Tio since no one had picked them. So, in this case, I do kind of just want to talk up, like, the rest of the cast, because like the whole cast dynamic is so strong in this one. Like, there's no one that like I would say doesn't feel like they pull their weight dramatically. And so I just want to talk up like, oh, like characters like Risha, when she finally joins the party, like she adds a lot to this dynamic. Wazi joining the party adds a lot to this dynamic. The weird, like, I love the way that his like rival from the slums, the Crossbell slums, is just so put off by my rival left. What do I do now? What am I here for?
He has an existential crisis. Yeah.
Yeah.
And yet I felt so bad for him.
When my rival leaves, I too have an existential crisis and get high out of my mind. But yeah, like I just want to give a shout out that, like, you know, I love, you know, all these characters, but I really want to bring up that, like, even a character that I could look at them and say, like, that's my least favorite character of this cast, it would still be like, I still really like that character.
There are so many good, even small characters. Cal plays a bigger role in this one, and he's like so delightfully, you know, like, you know, he's playing every side against one another. You know,
yeah,
so many great little NPCs. And you know, like, returning characters like Killica and you know, Gilead Osborne and everybody else, you start to see their roles grow. So it's a fun game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really doesn't have, there's no such thing as a weak link in this. It's all just like strength to strength from tip to tail.
So then I have to ask again, what was your favorite chess joke?
Give me a moment. I need to look at some. You can all list yours.
Sorry, well, I screenshot all of them.
So I've got, you know, I'm always good with the pun. Puns are the best. So I picked two here. So one of them said, "It's been years and I still can't figure it out." Then it asks, "What is a," and then in quotes, "Azure?" Like, they split up Azure into two things. Like, what is Azure and why do the trails lead to it?
Yeah, good, that one good. Made me laugh pretty hard.
And then there's one that brings up, you know, any reference to that other big Falcon series would be a great Easter egg.
Oh, God.
With YSE's Easter egg. Yeah.
One of the quickest ways to get me to laugh is to make a Simpsons reference. So, see my vest made with real Gordian chest.
I'm always a sucker for a Princess Bride reference. So it was like, "My name is Inigo Chestoya. You opened my father. Prepare to die."
That one was pretty funny too.
They could have actually programmed that into being a, you know, a chest that attacks you. Would have been perfect.
Would have been good for. Does this have the chests like in? I'm sure it does. But in Cold Steel, where there's battle chests.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, they're battle chests. At least I remember them in the last dungeon.
So
not the exact same mechanic, but yes.
Yeah.
So I do also love the weirdly meta ones. Like, if you think about it, isn't it weird that you got 5 points from the detective agency for breaking out of prison?
I was actually looking at that one as I was going through the list. I was like, oh.
I appreciate this one that's just fully into like fan nerd mod shit. Download the chess evolution mod so that every chess message in the game will be voiced.
There was one where it was like error opening file chest message.dll or something like that.
Yeah, that one had me going too. I had saved so many screenshots because of this game that I had to finally clean out my screenshot folder on my Switch. And that was like days of like trying to, okay, I don't need this one. This one was clearly an accidental screenshot. And the Switch's system is not very conducive to doing a massive clean out. And then I figured out that I could just put my SD card right in my PC.
Yeah, you can just go right into your OS and fix it there.
Because Switch stuff is so notorious for not being that user-friendly.
Oh, I think they are nowadays. Once you plug them in...
The data structure has always been extremely readable. Like, even the 3DS data structure, you could just slam that thing into a PC and it would be readable.
I want to say early on, the Switch was divided into folders by date or month or something like that. But now you plug it in and it's just by game.
Yeah. So I threw them all in my external drive, and that's, I've been using my own screenshots for our thumbnails instead of having to steal them from Steam.
I've forgotten this one. Attached to the bomb is a label that reads best before S1005. Perhaps you shouldn't use this one.
Oh, and the one with the clipped grass had a callback that said, "What? The clipped grass awakened something in me." So good to know that they kept the continuity.
Yep. You're going to continue two games in the same setting. Might as well have the clipped grass again.
Especially since they didn't bother to fix it.
Is I the box of iron, Chancellor? How long do you think Chess Bell can hold out?
Oh, chess jokes, you will be missed.
Yeah, we have to enjoy these now because this is the last ones.
Their neighbors can't talk.
Yeah.
Wasn't that the joke last time?
There is a reference to, like, it's scary that Erebonian chests don't talk. Let me see if I can find this.
So, while David is finding that, did we have any special memories tied to this game? I played it this year, so I've got nothing. I just played it at bedtime and showed my husband chess jokes.
Yeah,
you and I were talking about this beforehand, Kelly, that, like, I played this in such a weird, haphazard manner. Because I picked it up, like we talked about at the beginning, from that Chinese store so I could play it with a patch. And I got, like, half, two-thirds of the way through it, and I kind of, like, went off on a trip to like, go look for a house. And then I came back and played a little more, and then went off on, you know, more house hunting and moving stuff. And at some point, I eventually just kind of, like, you know, petered out. And, like, literally, I did not finish the game until last night at, like, I don't know what it was. It was, like, 12:31 in the morning. That's when I beat the last boss last night. Because I was just like, okay, I'm basically at the end of the game. I think I was at the second fight with Aria, the last fight with Arios, and just kind of, like, pushed my way through the last boss. And it was kind of crazy because I was playing that last night and me and Kel were talking about it. And I had turned Lloyd into just an invasion monster, which is usually a good strategy in a Trails game. You just, like, try and load up at least one of your characters to just evade all attacks.
Yep, and that's so, my default VA.
Exactly. So I'm fighting the last boss, and I think it was, like, he summoned these, like, four other enemies, and if you didn't manage to...
Yeah, there's, like, a trick to this.
Yeah. So, like, if you don't destroy some of them, he's able to, like, suck them in and then do, like, a massive attack that basically will wipe out your party. And so I'm playing it...
Do damage.
Do what?
It doesn't even do damage. Like, it doesn't even bother doing damage. It just ends the fight.
Exactly. So, see, that's what was happening and what was frustrating me was that, like, it was doing a complete party wipe, but Lloyd was actually evading the attack. And so it's giving me the game over. Your party has been wiped, but Lloyd has full health. And I'm like,
it's really funny because I did the same thing. I got to a point where it's like, okay, there's no way that he can kill me. It'll be fine. And then, like, I just get wiped and it's like, what the fuck?
Okay, so this is something that's still in the game. I was wondering if it was just, like, in the earlier PC version that maybe didn't get patched, but, like, no, this is just in there. It's okay. Now I know my frustration was, you know, like, valid. Okay.
I wanted to bring up one of these other, this last chest thing that I found.
Sure.
That I appreciated. Because, like, the very opening of the game, technically, like, the cold open is in Calvard. And so one of the chests there says, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but I think my friends and I will be the only Calvardian chests you ever meet that talk.
Ah, chest jokes. We miss you.
Josh, I remember you talking on RPGcast when you got the fan translation of Azure that you was having trouble getting into other games because you just wanted to go back to Trails.
I know.
But that I also know that was also during your very stressful moving saga, so I understand why you had to step away from it for a while.
Well, that was the problem. I had it installed on, like, my gaming PC, and I did not lug that along with me. And then I ended up with these long, you know, like, I didn't play it for, like, 2.5 months. What the heck was going on again? So, you know, that always makes it difficult to come back to a game.
Yeah, especially if your game PC is packed and you don't feel like rearranging your whole setup just to get to it.
Uh-huh.
I feel that.
Well, you know, like, it was it's not just like it was a Steam game. It was this one I downloaded from a Chinese website and then applied the patch to. So it's like, I'm not going through that process again on a different computer.
You don't get the luxury of, like, transferring saves anyway. It has to be on that computer.
Uh-huh. Like, I'm sure there was some way to hack it and make it work on, like, my Steam Deck, but I don't really want to spend, like, 10 hours figuring that out.
And you were too far in to want to restart the game.
Exactly.
Yep, I feel you there.
And my memories of this was the exact same as last time, because I went straight into, right as we took over this podcast, I went straight into Zero from that first December that we were co-hosting, and then did the first half of this. And honestly, I don't even remember when I did the second half, because it was straight through the Zero and half of Azure, and then maybe about a year later, but I got no memories of the second half.
I'm pretty sure it was
after
one of the backtracks. Like, we did one Falcom backtrack, and you were like, oh yeah, I need to get back to...
You know, it was probably like a year later, we had finally, yeah. Like, oh, and you know what? Probably, because we've done Cold Seal 2, 3, and then 4, and we were doing them in, like, January that first time, so it's probably right around one of those, you're right. Each time we have one, it's like, oh yeah, I've set that aside for 7 or 8 months, time to play another game.
And then you play two, and then burn yourself out halfway through.
Yep. And then I'm burnt out for a bit. Yep. That you're right. That is usually how this has gone the past 4 years. I've got Reverie sitting on my nightside table. Like, that should be one of the next few games I play.
Yeah, I sort of broke my promise to play Reverie after I finished Metaphor, because then I realized the Ease was coming out and I really wanted to play it on PlayStation. And then haven't had a chance to play it at all this week, just because I have not been in it. Well, I've been in a video game mood, but Vampire Survivors, kind of like half paying attention to a game while watching a show kind of mood.
Survivors is perfect for that.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I chewed through Legend of Vox Machina season 3, and I think The Boys the most recent season, and I'm trying to get through all of Invincible. But I think I'm ready to go back to some Ease. And did anybody else have any other memories?
I played this back to back with Zero, so
okay.
Pretty similar.
They're all the same ones as from Zero.
No worries. It was Breath of the Wild. I was going to say, I just wish I could remember what game it was that distracted me when this first came out.
Pretty sure you're right. It was Breath of the Wild, and then you went right into Tears of the Kingdom, and you were like, it was like 2 months right there, something like that.
Well, and not just that, I had to cram in Fuga 2 in between, because Fuga 2 came out on my birthday, May 11th.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, see, there was a bunch of stuff. There was a bunch, yeah.
Tears came out like a day later, so I think what I did was I popped in a little bit of Tears, got it out of my system, and then spent a whole weekend chugging through Fuga. It's like, talk about first world problems. Two of my favorite series is coming out within a day of each other. I'll have to put Fuga 2 on our list for next year as well, and maybe Tears of the Kingdom, if we still count Zelda as a RPG.
It is grandfathered in. Absolutely.
Yep.
I mean, Tears has a better argument than most.
Yeah, true. I just remember that being a banned topic on the forum back in the day. Don't argue about what an RPG is.
It's not a worthwhile discussion.
Especially if the argument is Zelda. And who else? Oh, go ahead.
No, I'm just shouting Play Trails as my final missive into the night.
Yeah, well, what I was about to say was, speaking of notorious gaming arguments, we've got a divisive one next show. We're finally trucking out the Final Fantasy 13 to talk about its merits, whether or not it's a game or a gigantic hallway.
I don't think I'm scheduled for that one, but I will register. It's pretty good.
It's one of those games that I definitely understand the complaints, but also thought it got very unfairly criticized when it was a thing. But I don't want to burn too much show material. I've actually got a lot of stuff to read about, and I've got to rewatch some YouTube videos that went into its development, because finding out what I found out about the development of that game, it's a miracle that we even got it. So all the problems didn't surprise me, but I still enjoyed my time with it. But we will get into that in a pair of weeks. We've only got, I think, 3 more shows before the end of the year. Yeah, because there was this one, and then Final Fantasy 13, Lost Odyssey, and Chained Echoes, which I'm also trying to do for backtrack homework.
I'm sorry.
I know. but we will get into that later. Thank you, David and Josh, for showing up.
It's certainly. It always is.
wishing Sam a get well soon. I'm so sorry she couldn't be part of the show. I understand, though. It's hard to do a show when you're feeling under the weather, whether you're a guest or a host.
My jokes about rewriting Tom Jones's Oh Mandy to be Oh Randy will never come to fruition.
Aw. Well, maybe you can serenade it to her later. And thank you, Matt, for hanging out with us tonight. I could not do the show without you.
Of course.
And thank you, listener, for hanging out with us, letting us gush about trails for, 3 hours between two shows. We'll be back in a pair of weeks with Final Fantasy 13. You have a good rest of your week. We'll see you soon. Done.